welcome to Wizard Studies.
Join us as we peruse all things Potter.
Hello, and welcome to the first episode of Wizard Studies. I'm Katie.
And I'm Audrey.
Today, we're going to start breaking down Ronald Bilious Weasley. We're going to do an in-depth dive on his character and his importance to this series. So today, we're going to start out with his Pottermore fact file. Pretty basically, we're going to start with his birthday. His birthday is March 1st, 1980. So if you listen to this the day that it's released, his birthday is today, and so he'd be turning 39 today.
Happy birthday, Ron.
Yes, happy birthday.
39, that's pretty old.
I know.
All right. So Ron has two wands throughout the series. The first wand that he gets was Charlie's old wand. And it's 12 inches, ashwood, and unicorn tail. I don't think it really makes sense to really go into why we think Ron would get this wand, because it did not choose him. This wand was chipped in places, and the unicorn tail was sticking out of the top. So we're thinking Charlie probably bought himself a new wand, because he might have needed a perfectly functioning wand for his dangerous job as a dragon trainer. And I wonder what Charlie could have been doing to chip his wand. Yeah. And get the unicorn tail sticking out of the top. Seems pretty reckless.
Yeah. And I mean, if he graduated that year or the year before, he'd only had the wand for 7 years. I feel like that's not a long time to have a wand for in the wizarding world, if you have one your whole life.
Yeah, definitely. Also, this wand did cause Ron to have a lot of spells go wrong, which is unfortunate. We do have the whole eat slugs incident. But we also have the shittiness of this wand to thank for Lockhart's memory charm rebounding and hitting him instead of Harry and Ron. So I think even though it's kind of sad that Ron didn't get to get his own wand at the start of his Hogwarts career, we can be thankful that he did have to have Charlie's bad hand-me-down wand.
Yeah, it did do something good.
Yeah.
And so then his second wand was 14 inches. It was willow wood and had unicorn tail as the core. So then we're just going to break down the willow wood and the unicorn hair and see how this wand fits Ron. So the writing on Pottermore from Ollivander's perspective says, "Willow is an uncommon wandwood with healing power, and I have noted that the ideal owner for a willow wand often has some usually unwarranted insecurities." So I think this perfectly describes Ron. He's very insecure. Throughout this series, he always sees himself as second best to Harry. He's living in his brother's shadow and Harry's shadow throughout his entire life, and just he always kind of has a chip on his shoulder due to that. And then later in the description, it says that they have they select wizards or witches that have the greatest potential. And then at the end, it says, "He who has furthest to travel will go fastest with Willow," which we can see shown in Ron because he does live up to his potential at the end. And it kind of comes with him getting his own wand. You can see the shift in his skills and his ability in school when he gets a wand that chooses him because it performs better for him. And then I really liked the line at the end where it says, "He who has furthest to travel will go fastest with Willow," because Ron's character is so dynamic and he grows so much between the beginning and the end of the series. So I think that's really poetic and fits Ron really well.
I totally agree. He's a very dynamic character, and we see that in his wand.
Mm-hmm. And then with the unicorn hair, it says that it's least subject to fluctuation and blockages, which I think Ron, he doesn't always produce the best magic, but I think he's pretty consistent with it.
I really like the part in the unicorn hair description that says that wands of unicorn hair are prone to melancholy if seriously mishandled, meaning that the hair may die and need replacing. This is super interesting because it really reinforces the wand being a living thing. But I think it also reflects Ron's personality in that he's really sensitive. Like, he is prone to melancholy, especially during his puberty years. He definitely takes things very, very harshly, and he gets really affected by them, which is similar to the wand. The hair may die and need replacing. Like, Ron needs to recover a little bit, and he doesn't just let things roll off his shoulders super easily.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
So, Ron's house is Gryffindor. We all know this, all the Weasleys.
Yeah, and then his Patronus is a Jack Russell Terrier, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later when we talk about his relationship with Hermione and why that Patronus is his and why that Patronus is important.
Yeah, definitely. And then parents, Molly and Arthur Weasley, two of the best parents in the wizarding world.
The best parents. And I think they're also... I have a lot of issues with people always saying that, oh, Hagrid was the best father figure to Harry. Oh, Lupin was the best father figure to Harry. I take issue with that because I think Arthur was the best father figure to Harry. And I think Molly was such a surrogate mother. And I think she prided herself in taking that place in Harry's life and loved that she could love him.
Yeah, she loves him like one of her own.
Yeah, so cute. And then, so on his Pottermore profile, his skills are wizard chess, which we see in the Chamber of Secrets, especially when he wins the best wizard chess match ever played, or however Dumbledore describes it at the end, and Quidditch goalkeeping, which we see a lot in books 5 and 6, with him being the Gryffindor goalkeeper and kind of coming to his own. And that's when he gains a lot of confidence in the series, when he starts playing Quidditch.
I think it's interesting that Quidditch goalkeeping is listed as, like, one of his number one skills.
Yeah.
Because it is something that he struggles a lot with throughout the series, being very, very not confident about it. And he's definitely not the best keeper, but he does come into his own and becomes a crucial part of the team.
Yeah.
So then his hobbies on the Quidditch theme are supporting the Chudley Cannons, which... he does very well. And eating sweets. He's always eating sweets.
Yeah, can you blame the guy? Those are good. Then for each of our character profiles, we're going to start out the episode with their Pottermore fact file, and then we're going to go into their first mention of the series, in the series. So Ron's first mention is on platform, or right before they enter platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross Station in the first book in Sorcerer's Stone. Or Philosopher's Stone. And so the quote is, she, meaning Molly, pointed at the last and youngest of her sons. He was tall, thin, and gangly, with freckles, big hands and feet, and a long nose. So that's the first impression we get of Ron in the entire series. And, of course, we learn a little bit more about him as the series goes on. But I think that's really cool that it's the first mention, because you get such a vivid image of what Ron looks like from this description, and I love it.
Yeah, so we're going to do a segment in each of our episodes on the Myers-Briggs personality types that have been assigned to these, to each character by various fans. So the assignments that I will be using are from, I think they originated with Simbaga on Tumblr. That's the username, S-I-M-B-A-G-A, so credit to them. And they assigned Ron the ENFP personality type. So if you're not familiar with Myers-Briggs personality types, every personality gets 4 letters. There's 4 letters assigned out of 8 letters total. So you're either E or I, for example, extroverted or introverted. And I think it's really interesting to dive into these personality types. So I got this information from a website called 16 Personalities, where you can take the test if you want online. It's pretty short. They shorten it from the real, like, full-length one. But this website assigns the ENFP personality type, so Ron's personality type, as the campaigner. So just reading through that description a little bit, they say that ENFPs will bring an energy that oftentimes thrusts them into the spotlight, held up by their peers as a leader and a guru. So this didn't immediately strike me as being like Ron. I think when we think about the spotlight, and in this series, we always think of Harry, and Ron is sometimes really jealous of Harry being in the spotlight. But if you compare Ron to basically any character besides Harry, he is... he ends up being in the spotlight because he's Harry's best friend. So almost every time Harry is in trouble, Ron's right there with him. And so you see this, like, when sometimes Harry saves the day, like, Ron also gets credit. And I think people probably do see Ron as a leader for this. He also serves kind of as the guru for the trio with the wizarding world. So he is a leader within the trio in that sense. He has a wizarding family, grew up in the wizarding world, whereas Harry and Hermione did not. They grew up with muggles. So he is, I think this gets lost a lot in the movies, but he does become their default for a lot of, like, niche wizarding things that Hermione hasn't read about in books since Ron has to fill them in. Mm-hmm. Further on in the description, they say that ENFPs can quickly lose patience or become dejected if they get trapped in a boring role. And this is definitely Ron. He loses patience very quickly, and dejection pretty much describes him through, like, all of book four. And he does not, he's always afraid of getting trapped in the boring role. Like, he doesn't want to be left out. He, like, has a lot of insecurities about being cast aside within his family. And I think because of that, he wants to, like, serve an important role, like, within the trio and his friendship with Harry. So going on, ENFPs are very emotional and sensitive, and when they step on someone's toes, they both feel it. This is all of Ron and Hermione's relationship until they finally acknowledge that they both like each other. They're always stepping on each other's toes and then both being upset by it, and they don't, like, communicate very well and realize that they're both people are equally affected. And the emotional insensitivity thing, totally Ron again. Like, we see his emotions running rampant throughout the series. So then the last little description I have here is that ENFPs will spend a lot of time exploring social relationships, feelings, and ideas before they find something that really rings true. But when they finally do find their place in the world, their imagination, empathy, and courage are likely to produce incredible results. So I love this last sentence of that description. Ron takes a while to come into his own, but when he does, he has learned from all his little missteps along the way. He has to find his place because he always feels like he's being overshadowed by all of his brothers and Ginny and Harry and everyone, pretty much. He's always self-conscious of that. But by the end of the series, he really has contributed massively to saving the wizarding world. And I think empathy and courage are two really big traits that Ron has. Obviously, courage being a Gryffindor. And so I think that this personality type fits him pretty well. I agree with the way it was assigned to him. I just thought it was interesting to break down.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I really like the 16 personalities in general, so I think it's really cool if we can dive into the Harry Potter characters through the Myers-Briggs personality lens. So then moving on, we're going to look at a list of Ron's kind of emotional freakouts or meltdowns and talk about kind of their importance to each book that they're in and kind of to the character of Ron in general. So the first one we see, the first big freakout we see really is when he believes that Crookshanks killed Scabbers and ate him. He ends up freezing Hermione out for a good portion of the book, which we look back and laugh at because, first off, we know that he didn't really like Scabbers to begin with. He thought he was, like, a gross, annoying rat. And then it turns out that Scabbers is one of the worst human beings in the wizarding world, Peter Pettigrew. So looking back, this freakout is kind of silly, but it's the first one where we get a hint of, like, okay, maybe Ron is a little bit emotionally unstable, but I think that one serves a big purpose in that book because you kind of get to see the trio grow up a little bit. They're not little kids anymore. They can have fights and overcome them and still be friends. They're at that age where that's becoming more common.
Yeah, they've definitely built, like, and solidified enough of a friendship that this isn't going to be the end of their friendship, even though probably as, like, 13-year-olds they thought that. Also, yeah. I think it's interesting because this freakout was also a little bit sparked by Hermione telling McGonagall about the firebolt and McGonagall taking it away to be stripped down because they're afraid that Sirius was trying to kill Harry. So it's part of this freakout is not just related to Scabbers. He is upset because Harry's firebolt gets taken away, and he is siding with Harry on that, but yeah, it's a little immature of him.
Yeah, and so in this next breakout, he does not side with Harry. I'm, of course, speaking about in the Goblet of Fire, after Harry gets picked to be a Triwizard Champion, Ron becomes the most annoying prick ever for, like, the first half of the school year. And I think this goes back to what we mentioned earlier and how he has a lot of insecurities and how he's always used to being in the shadow of his brothers and his best friend, Harry. I think this is one of the biggest points where Harry does something or gets picked to be something that isn't just based on him being the chosen one kind of thing. Because a lot of Harry's end of year saviors, the school doesn't have time to react to it, but this is ongoing throughout the entire school year, so Ron sees it and feels it every day. So I think this one hits him a little bit harder. And he also just doesn't believe Harry when he says that he didn't put his name in the Goblet of Fire, which I really never understood that. I never understood why Ron didn't just trust Harry. And I think it's because he didn't want to believe Harry and he wanted to get mad at him. That's the only reason I can think of.
Yeah, I think he was definitely looking for a reason.
Yeah. So then moving on, I think it's interesting to point out that I didn't list any of his him having a freak out in Order of the Phoenix, because I don't think he really has one. I could be wrong. I haven't read that or re-listened to it in a while, but I don't think there's one big one at least. And it's interesting because I think that it's because Harry's having a freak out that entire book, and it's when he's moody and emotional. And so I think Ron basically has to man up and be there for his friend when his friend is going through his emotional turmoil. Then the next one kind of comes with him in The Half-Blood Prince, him being a Quidditch keeper and him dating Lavender. Through him being a Quidditch keeper, he's never confident in himself, and he's always so insecure about it and doesn't think that he'll do a good job, that he just kind of brings everybody down all the time when he talks about it. And then one moment in particular after they do win the Quidditch World Cup, or the Quidditch House Cup, sorry, this is an Order of the Phoenix, so I guess I could have mentioned this when I was talking about Order of the Phoenix, but after he wins it for them, after Harry's banned because of Umbridge, he just goes around acting like a cocky jerk or like an asshole for the next week or whatever, because he thinks he's such a hot shot, and Harry and Hermione didn't actually watch the game, so the whole time they're like, yeah, I remember that, yeah, totally, basically catering to him, because this is the one time he's actually kind of proud of himself, and it's not a good look on him. And I think that also shows when he dates Lavender, that's when he kind of feels like a cool kid on campus. He feels confident for the first time. He's ready to have a girlfriend, and I think he uses it again to kind of get back at Hermione in some ways. And then Hermione obviously, like, uses Cormac to get back at Ron, and we'll get into that later when we talk about Ron and Hermione being together. And then the last one I have listed here is in Deathly Hallows, when he leaves the hunt for the Horcruxes for whatever, a month or so. And this obviously was fueled a lot by him having to wear the Horcrux, and he mentions that he even admits that he was more affected by the Horcrux than the other two were. But again, it's him just being moody and expecting too much, and I think Harry even mentions it, like, oh, you thought we were going to be, like, staying, you thought you'd be home to your mom by Christmas, you thought you would be getting home-cooked meals all the time. He's not used to, like, the roughing it that happens. Even though he didn't have a lot of money growing up, he always had comfort, and he doesn't have that now, and he's so out of his comfort zone that he emotionally can't handle it.
Yeah, just on the note of all of Ron's freakouts, I think it's so interesting that these are all book three and on, and I think when I think back on the series, I always am thinking about Ron's freakouts. Whenever I think about him, that's kind of the first thing that comes up plot-wise, and yeah. It's interesting to think that we can't really come up with anything too major from books one and two, and I wonder if that's Ron, like, growing up and going through puberty a little bit, but yeah. It's just there seems to be a little bit of a shift, especially around book four, when you see him and Harry start to fight a little bit, and him getting a lot more self-conscious and maybe aware of this, the difference between him and Harry's status.
Yeah, whenever I think about Goblet of Fire and Ron, there's that scene right after Harry's name was called out in the Great Hall, and they cut to Ron, and he's just got the meanest face. He just looks so angry at Harry, and I think that's a great... I think Rupert Grint portrays that pretty well in that instance.
Yeah, for sure. So, moving on to Ron and Hermione, their relationship. Do we think they belong together? So I think one of the my favorite pieces of evidence for this are their compatible Patronuses, the Jack Russell Terrier and the Otter. So I didn't know this, I feel like, for a while. And then when I found this out, I thought it was the cutest thing ever, that Jack Russell Terriers are known to chase after and play with otters, which just sums up Ron and Hermione so well. Ron's always trying to bring out the lighter side in Hermione, and he's always kind of playful, and that's their whole, like, teenage relationship or build-up to a relationship is him teasing him and playing with Hermione. But then on the other side, of course, we know that Hermione can encourage a more serious side in Ron. Sometimes she can get him to focus and, like, bring out this side of him that really is capable of anything when he focuses. And then we see Ron winning Hermione over completely when he shows his bravery and knowledge in Deathly Hallows. She always knew it was there, but he doesn't, like, fully... I feel like he doesn't have his, like, shining moment where he shows his bravery and knowledge until Deathly Hallows, like, when he gets them back into the Chamber of Secrets to go get the Basilisk Fang, when he kills the Horcrux on his own. And just since he comes back, he comes back from leaving the hunt for the Horcruxes, he seems to be more of a changed person. So I think that Hermione always knew that this side of him was in there, and she was attracted to him for that reason. But also, she just liked how much he made her laugh. I think it just brings out this totally lighter side of Hermione, and I really support it. I think it's so cute.
Yeah, I'm definitely not a Harry Hermione shipper. I definitely like the Ron and Hermione pairing better. And I think looking at their relationship, it's kind of the kind of relationship I would want. They started out as friends. They have a base relationship together. They have a history together. They've been through things that nobody else would understand. And I think that's really important in a relationship, to fully understand each other. And I don't know if either of them ended up with somebody else that somebody would, that other person would ever fully understand what they've been through and what they know and what they've seen. And then I think that they challenge each other a lot. I think Hermione challenges Ron to be a better person, to be more sensitive, to work harder. And I think Ron challenges Hermione to lay back a little, be more relaxed, go with the flow. And I think they're one of the perfect examples of opposites attracting. I think that I don't understand why people don't like the Ron and Hermione ship. Like, yes, they grew up and they had their fights, but just like any other couple, I know that they're friends at this point, but couples fight, friends fight, they get over it. And I think it shows that their relationship, I think it shows the strength of their relationship that they were able to get through everything that they went through and come out together.
Yeah, I think it definitely makes it seem like a more real relationship. Like, if they never fought, it would feel fake to me. It would feel like they never cared enough about each other to have these disagreements. So I totally agree with you on that.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the comparison of book Ron versus movie Ron. And I think this might be one of the biggest sections of this episode, because I have a lot to say on this. Because I think, not that movie Ron was bad by any means, but I think Ron is completely different from in the book and the movie. He serves two different purposes in each. He has a different purpose in each in the movie than in the book. And in the book, I think his purpose is he's a lot more important to the trio and to the hunt and to the defeat of the Dark Lord and to Harry's master plan and everything that goes on. So in the movie, I think that they made him pretty much the comic relief of the trio. And you kind of touched on this earlier, but one of the biggest ways they did this is they kind of took away his job in the book where it was kind of being their guide to the wizarding world, and he had this base of knowledge that Harry and Hermione didn't, because they grew up in the Muggle world. And they gave a lot of these things to Hermione in the movies to play up her all-knowing wisdom role. So a couple scenes where they did this is in the Sorcerer's Stone. There's a scene where they go down and they land in all of the devil's snare, and Hermione remembers that they don't like the light or the warmth, and Ron's like, well, then make a fire. And then Hermione goes, well, there's no wood. How am I supposed to make a fire if there's no wood? And then Ron's like, are you a witch or not? So I think that his instinct is just different. And I know that Harry and Hermione probably developed that instinct over time, but from the beginning, Ron is a magic first, like solve problems with magic kind of guy.
I also think that scene's kind of cool that Ron is the one that tells her, like, to make the fire with her wand, because then the fire ends up being a crucial part of Hermione's magic that she uses multiple times throughout the series. So, all comes back to Ron there.
Yeah, it does. And then another big scene where this happens is in the Chamber of Secrets, after Draco calls Hermione a mudblood. In the books, Hermione doesn't know what that means, and Ron is the one. He stands up for her. And another thing, I was just rewatching Chamber of Secrets not that long ago, and in the movie, Ron is the only one that kind of stands up for Hermione in that instance. But in the book, the like whole Quidditch team is offended. Like, I think they talk about how Fred and George react to it, and even Oliver Wood says something like, "Oh my gosh!" Like the whole team reacts to it, whereas in the movie, it's just Ron, which I don't think is a good. I don't think that's good, but. Anyways, I have problems with the movies. And so then after Hermione is called a mudblood, Ron is the one that has to explain to her what that means and explain to Harry what that means. But in the movie, Hermione is the one who does that. And I just, they take away so many of the scenes where Ron is the crucial and most important person of the trio. And they give it to Hermione a lot of the times. So like I said, build up her character as this. She knows everything, she's always right kind of character. And they make her into a caricature. And I think they do that to a lot of characters in the movie. And they even do this with Ron. They, like, take his comedic moments and make that his most important moments in the movies. Whereas in the movies, they're a lot more well... Or in the books, they're a lot more well-rounded. And then he also gets a lot of his brave moments taken away. And they take away a lot of the moments where he shows his loyalty to his friends. He stands up for Ron or for Harry and Hermione quite a bit throughout the books, and I don't think they show this very well in the movies. In The Prisoner of Azkaban, Snape calls Hermione an insufferable know-it-all in class, and Ron stands up to him, and he ends up, I think, getting detention for standing up for her, and that shows his loyalty and his braveness. And then this is one of my favorite moments that I found when I was researching for this episode. In The Prisoner of Azkaban, when they think that Sirius is still the murderer, and the Shrieking Shack, and like kind of when it all comes to blows, Ron is the one who stands up and says, you'll have to kill all three of us if you want to kill Harry, basically. And in the movies, I believe that's Hermione who says that. And on top of that, Ron has a broken leg at this point, and he literally stands up and stands on his broken leg to stand up for Harry and Hermione, which I think just shows his loyalty so well, and also his braveness and his chivalry. And then some other examples of this are in Order of the Phoenix, before Ron and Hermione kind of during the DA meetings when they go head to head, and I think they're like, whatever, they use some spell against each other. In the movies, he's like, oh yeah, I got this. And they show like Fred and George like taking bets of who they think is gonna win or something. And Ron is all cocky when he goes up there, and obviously he gets destroyed by Hermione. But in the books, he gets destroyed by Hermione in the books as well, but then he praises her abilities and is impressed by her abilities. His ego isn't hurt, whereas in the movies they only show his ego getting hurt. And then, obviously, one of my favorite Hermione moments is in The Deathly Hallows when Ron stands up and remembers the house elves during the Battle of Hogwarts and says, what about the house elves? We have to get them out. Like, this isn't their fight to fight. And that's obviously when Hermione kisses him, which is such a better kiss in the book than it is in the movies. Oh, God, so many things are wrong with the movies. But I think that also just shows his loyalty and his braveness, and he's grown, and it shows a specific thing that Hermione helped him grow on, and he's now better for have knowing Hermione.
Yeah, I think a lot of these instances you talked about Ron and Hermione, or Ron standing up for Hermione, and it just, these being left out of the movies, I feel like if you watched the movies, you wouldn't be as convinced of the Ron-Hermione relationship and Endgame. And that is one of my issues with Cursed Child, which there's a lot of issues. We can get into it some other episode. But I don't like how Ron is portrayed in Cursed Child because it feels like movie Ron. Mm-hmm. He is just Hermione's goofy husband that runs the joke shop. And sure, he has a few cute moments with the kids or something, you know, as Uncle Ron. But you don't see Hermione actually respecting him for his bravery and his knowledge and his loyalty, all those things that you just talked about that we see in the books and not the movies. And that's, like, what really won her over. She loves the jokes, too, but Hermione needs a more complex person than that. And book Ron is that complex person. But movie Ron, and I think Cursed Child Ron is not.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And then kind of going into more how book Ron was better than movie Ron. In the book, Ron is chosen as prefect. And in the movies, this was never mentioned. And I think that's a big moment for Ron where he's kind of validated. And it's something, I mean, if you go back to the Sorcerer's Stone, when he looks into the mirror of Erised, doesn't he see, like, him being head boy and him with the Quidditch cup? It's something that he strives for and wants so badly, and he finally gets validation for it. I think that's a big moment for him and kind of makes you see, like, okay, people realize how good of a guy Ron is and how skilled he is. And in the movies, that you don't get to know that. And then in the Deathly Hallows, this is a moment that really bothers me, and I've never really thought of before I was doing stuff for this episode. So when Ron leaves the hunt for Horcruxes, in the movie they make it seem like he leaves because he thinks that Hermione loves Harry and doesn't love him. Where in the books, he leaves because he misses his family and he misses the comforts of home. Like, it doesn't really have much to do with Harry and Hermione that at all. But in the movies, they portray this as the only reason that he's leaving. And I don't think that does Ron justice.
Yeah, I think you might have told me this, that the screenwriter or someone in for the seventh movie was a big Harry Hermione shipper. And I guess maybe that's why that got misconstrued, which I hate. Because I love the Harry Hermione friendship, like, as a friendship, not as a relationship. It's one of my favorite friendships between two people in the series. But I just think it's so stupid. And I think Ron did leave for more noble reasons in the book, and that just doesn't get shown because of this idea that was it the director or something?
Not
the
director. Yeah, I don't know. I think it was like a writer or something. An editor. I don't know. But yeah, and another thing with that is he leaves because he misses his family and he's worried about them. Like, his loyalty to his family is what makes him leave. And I mean, I don't know if him leaving was the brave or the noble thing to do, but I also don't think it was a terrible thing for him to do. His family was still fighting this fight where he was kind of, in theory, hiding away and not taking part in this big uprising that was happening. And his family was putting themselves in danger, and he was kind of shirking that responsibility, and he felt guilty about it. And then speaking of the Harry and Hermione friendship, they, in the movies, they emphasize this a lot more than the friendship between Harry and Ron, which I think is just as, or maybe even more important than Harry's friendship with Hermione. And then one big example of this is at the end of Half-Blood Prince, they show Hermione and Harry kind of standing up by the balcony, the railing of the astronomy tower or wherever they are. And that's when Harry takes out the fake Horcrux and was like, this was all for nothing, and is telling Hermione and talking about his feelings or whatever and what the plans are for the next year. And Ron is not a part of this scene at all. He's literally sitting on the floor like 10 feet away from them, not a part of this conversation, not a part of this planning for the next year. And I think that's one example of him just kind of being cut out of that trio that solid trio relationship. And then another example of this is whenever Ron is having one of his tantrums or hissy fits and he's not hanging out with Harry. Harry talks about how much he misses Ron and how Ron is so much more fun to be around. He basically says that he likes hanging out with Ron better than he likes hanging out with Hermione. He says that in maybe not so many words, but that's what he talks about. And so I think that also shows the strength of their relationship and how much Harry misses him when Ron is gone. And they don't show that in the movies, so you don't get that. That relationship isn't as in your face as it is in the book. And then I think perhaps Ron's most important purpose in the series is giving Harry a home, giving Harry a family. Because, like we were talking about earlier, Arthur and Molly are basically Harry's surrogate parents. They're the ones, the Burrow is the house he goes to on holiday, over Christmas, over the summer. He can't wait to be with Ron and Hermione at the Burrow or at 12 Grimmauld Place, wherever the Weasleys are. He feels so comfortable in that house. Mrs. Weasley gives him Christmas presents and Easter presents and Valentine's Day presents, probably. And I think that is really important for Ron to have done. And then also he gives him a family because, like, Jenny's a sister who is then Harry's wife.
Yeah, I think that this gets overlooked in the movies, but also just in general because we're always talking about, oh, Harry finds his home at Hogwarts. Hogwarts will always be there to welcome you home.
Yeah.
But we don't so much talk about the Weasley home being Harry's new home. And this goes back to what you were saying about Molly and Arthur. Arthur particularly getting overlooked as, like, parental figures for Harry. And I think this is such a crucial part. We have no idea where Harry would have been without the Weasleys. If you take Molly or Arthur or Ginny or Ron or Fred and George out of the equation, Harry wouldn't have been the person he was today. I mean, he has less of a connection with Percy and Bill and Charlie, but the younger Weasleys and the parents totally shape who Harry becomes.
Yeah, for sure. I think that that's such an important relationship that Ron gives him, and I think that that's really overlooked, and that's a really big... That's one of the reasons why Ron is so important, I think. And I mean, I get that that kind of takes away from his character because that has nothing to do with who he is. It has to do with what he did for Harry. But I think that that's super important to Harry's character growth and who he becomes and how he's able to live through the war and take down the Dark Lord. I just think that that's so important, and the movies don't show that at all. One more note on the trio's relationships with each other. Ron's friendship is so much different with Harry than Hermione's friendship with Harry. Hermione is kind of more like this big sister or mom sometimes. She's always nagging them about homework, especially in Goblet of Fire. One of Hermione's only purposes in that book is to nag Harry about working on the tasks. I feel as though every time we see her in that book, she says something along the lines of, have you worked out the clue yet? What have you done to help you prepare for the next task? And then she's the one who nags Harry into starting the DA and being the teacher of the DA. Also, later on in that book, when Harry makes the decision to go to the ministry to save Sirius after his dream, Hermione is so against this decision, and Ron backs Harry up and basically just says, okay, when are we going? How do we get there? I'm down. And Hermione, always the voice of reason, is like, well, maybe we should check and see if Sirius is at Grimmauld Place before we go running off. Maybe this, maybe that. And Ron is just so much more willing to, he supports Harry no matter what. And sometimes that could be a bad thing, but I think that's part of him, it's a big part of his friendship with Harry, is him always supporting Harry and being behind him no matter what, barring a couple of his tantrums throughout the novels.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so moving on to the next section. We're going to talk a little bit about where Ron is now, post the Deathly Hallows. So immediately after the war, Ron was recruited by Kingsley Shacklebolt to be an Auror for the Ministry. And this is really cool because we know that this is what he wanted, like Harry, but Harry is, obviously we hear more of Harry's perspective and desire to become an Auror throughout the books. And during the school years of the books, the times that we really get to focus on school, I always got the feeling that Ron wasn't as inclined to or talented as Harry for being an Auror, and I don't think this is necessarily true. It's just that Harry got to prove his worth for being an Auror multiple times, way more than any 17-year-old or whatever 14, 15-year-old should have had the opportunity to. But then Ron totally proves his worth in Deathly Hallows. After he leaves Harry and Hermione and he has to fight off Snatchers on his own, he finds them, returns back, saves Harry, and gets the sword. That's kind of the shining moment for him where you're like, yeah, he could totally make a really good Auror on his own, not just with Harry and Hermione. And then after that career, he helps George run the joke shop. We don't know when he started doing this, but it seems like it was a little later in life when he stopped being an Auror or just spent less time doing that. I like to think that maybe he took this on when Hermione became minister because he wanted to have someone home with the kids more. Like, those are two pretty hard jobs for two parents to have. And obviously, on that note, we know that he marries Hermione. They have two children together, Rose and Hugo, and he is the godfather of James Sirius Potter, which is pretty natural. I don't know who else would get to be the godfather of Harry's first child.
Yeah, no, I agree. I just wanted to mention something about his children's names. So I feel like Harry gets a lot of flack for the naming of his children, which I don't think is necessarily undeserved. Yeah. What the fuck, Harry? Anyways, but Rose and Hugo just... I don't know how I feel about those names. They just... I guess they do kind of have this Weasley feel to them. They're more like homey names. They're not crazy names. I don't know. I feel like with a lot of the names from the Next Generation kids, you can see where they came from. Like George names a kid Fred. Harry's names a kid after everybody ever met in his life. But I just feel like Rose and Hugo are so random. But I do think that is kind of more Ron and Hermione's style. So I understand, but I just think they stand out a lot because they're not very similar to the rest of the Next Generation kids.
Yeah, I always question like where they came from. Yeah. Rose, I always kind of associate with Lily because it's like two flower names. Even though that doesn't make sense, why would Ron named his kid after his best friend's mom, whom he never met. But that's what I always think of. I'm just like, okay, maybe JK was thinking of flower names. And then, do we know their middle names? Because I would like to think that Rose's middle name is Molly, but I don't know if we ever get told it.
I'm going to look it up real quick, because I pulled this information from the lexicon, and I don't think a middle name was listed for either of them. Yeah, it doesn't look like it. On her Wikia, though, it is Rose Granger Weasley.
Right, that's it.
The last name is Dash. Yeah. No, I don't think that gives a middle name.
Hugo is... I don't know. I wonder if Hugo got... Would his middle name be Arthur? I also kind of like the idea of maybe they use something from Hermione's side, since their everyday lives are so tied to Ron's side of the family. Like, I don't know. I don't think we'll ever know this, but maybe Rose is a family name in the Grangers or something like that. Yeah. That would be kind of cute.
Yeah, maybe Ron and Hermione were just smarter in naming their kids and gave them the weird names as their middle names as opposed to their first names, which is what I'm going to do when I name my kids. They're going to have Harry Potter middle names, not first names, so I don't look too crazy to other parents when they see, like, Hermione on the roll call. Oh, I wonder if your mom liked Harry Potter. No, they're going to have
middle names.
There's
going to be so many kids in after us.
Like, 5 to 10 years from now, Hermione's going to be the most popular girl's name. No doubt.
I always wanted to name my daughter Hermione, but now I'm like, I don't think I can do that. I'd have to be more discreet about it.
Something. Yeah, no, I agree. I think I'm definitely going to have to go middle names, be Harry Potter inspired.
So this next section, we're calling it the restricted section. And basically, I think at the end of all of our character episodes, it's just going to be some unpopular opinions that we have on the characters that maybe the fandom wouldn't agree with. Anything kind of that you might not want to readily admit in a large group of Harry Potter fans. So my restricted section opinions on Ron, which I don't know how unpopular this is. I think a lot of people love Ron, but I think a lot of people feel this way. But anyway, I like Ron in everything. I'm beginning to like him more as I like grow up and understand him a little bit more, but he's still definitely my least favorite of the trio. Like, I don't even think it's close. I never shipped Harry and Hermione as a couple. I think that's weird, but I loved their friendship. And even though Harry says that Hermione kind of annoys him when Ron's not around, I do like some of the times when Ron's not around, and like Half-Blood Prince is my favorite book, and part of that is Harry and Hermione spend a lot of time together and Ron is off being so annoying with Lavender, and I can just be mad at Ron for a real reason during that time. So I guess that's a little bit of an unpopular opinion, that maybe I really like Harry and Hermione's friendship, but I don't know. What do you think?
I can agree to that first to some extent. I love the friendship between Harry and Hermione. And I think maybe my unpopular opinion, speaking of the friendship between Harry and Hermione, is I love the scene in Deathly Hallows when they dance together in the tent. I think it's so cute. I never read that or saw that or thought of that as a romantic scene between them.
Right.
Because Harry's like goofing off. He's being a terrible dancer. They're just laughing. It's just this moment of happiness and joy in this very dark, solemn time. So I do get where you're coming from for that, from that aspect, but I also think the trio when they're not together isn't the same. There, you can tell that somebody's missing, that something's missing. And I think Ron is like them all being together is really important for them to be able to function and be successful. So I don't know if I would say I like the times when Ron is gone. And I definitely hated when he was with Lavender. I don't understand that.
But I think I like to be mad at Ron. Even though, yeah, I like him, I just like to roll my eyes at him. And
blame his him whole for
thing,
stuff.
Yeah, his whole thing with Lavender is comical and also just annoying enough that I can be like, Jesus, Ron, what the fuck are you doing?
He's just a horny teenager. And Hermione wasn't giving him any, so.
Oh! Yikes! I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. Okay, so then moving on to the last section of the episode, we're gonna do our pop quiz. So keeping with kind of a Ron theme for this episode, the question this time is, if you could eat any sweet from the wizarding world, what would it be?
Okay, I am not totally certain on my answer for this. I guess it would be Florian Fortescue's ice cream. Just because Harry talks about it so much, I feel like it must be really good ice cream.
Speaking of Florian Fortescue, I love the parts in Prisoner of Azkaban where Harry is like hanging out at the Leaky Cauldron by himself for however long he was there before Ron gets there. And he just goes, gets ice cream and talks with this old man, and this old man teaches him things about history of magic. I think they reference him again when Harry's taking the history of magic exam at the end of the year or the end of one of his years. And he says, oh, I remember Florian Fortescue talking about that. And then in the last book, they show that he was abducted from his business and probably was killed. I just think he's such an underrated character. I think those scenes of Harry just living life in the wizarding world are so cute when he's in Prisoner of Azkaban. But anyways, I think my answer to this would probably be cauldron cakes. I'm a huge chocolate cake fan, so what can go wrong with cauldron cakes? And I've had them when I went down to the wizarding world in Orlando, and they're so good. But then if I had to pick, that's kind of a boring answer because cauldron cakes I don't think are really magical or special, at least not that I could find anywhere, the description of them. So I think I'm going to also have my second answer be chocolate frogs because, again, I'm a huge chocolate fan, and I think it would be super fun to have to try and catch it before you eat it. work yeah. for that work off the calories before you eat them, you know. Makes sense.
Yeah, I think it would be I would want to try some of the other stuff, but I think if I'm sitting down to eat a sweet and enjoy my dessert, I'm going to have to go with the ice cream. I would want to try like acid pops and stuff like that, but just a little bit. Just try it once and that's it, just for fun.
Yeah. I would stray away from the cockroach clusters. I don't know what those are, but I would not try them.
Just sounds terrible. All right, so just a note, a few announcements. We are releasing this episode on a Friday, so if you're listening right after we released it. But we're going to start releasing our episodes on Tuesdays every other week. So this episode came out Ron's birthday, that's why it's on a Friday, it's a little different. But then we are going to start doing them every other week. So make sure you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts to get those every Tuesday.
Yeah, and then the second episode is going to come out on the 5th, so we're not going to wait a week in between episodes. But then from then, it's going to be a week in between each. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. For both of those, our handle is Wizard Studies Podcast. And we'll just be posting fun stuff there. And if you want to get to know us better, we'll probably put some stuff about us on there as well.
All right. As always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, just do your best. We'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.